Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Phosphorus celebrates its 350th birthday this year. Well, the element itself has been around for far longer than that, but it was discovered 350 years ago by an alchemist searching for the elixir of life. Phosphorus didn't turn out to be that elixir, but it is essential for life, and it has become a critical part of the fertilizers that fuel modern agriculture. And here's the twist. We're running out of it. Joining me now is Peter Killian. He's a senior lecturer in the School of Chemistry at the University of St. Andrews, and he's written about the past and the future of phosphorus for TheConversation.com. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
The discovery of phosphorus was an accident. You say actually possibly one of the greatest accidental discoveries of all time. You put it on par with Columbus discovering North America when he was actually looking for India. So what was going on and what was the actual thing that was being searched for?
Well, I think Hennig Brandt was actually looking for a philosopher's stone. So that was a magical substance that people believed then that they can make it and that it can, well, for example, transform base metals like lead or mercury into gold. And they also believed that it can heal any illnesses. That it's a very powerful substance that can do anything you want, really.
So philosopher's stone today sounds like something out of Harry Potter, but alchemy, I mean, the predecessor to modern chemistry was kind of the cutting edge of science at that point, right?
Well, yeah, you can say that. Yeah, alchemy was, it was actually quite an advanced form of chemistry compared to what was there before, of course.
And what was the process that Hennig Brandt was using to look for the philosopher's stone?
Well, it is quite disgusting, unfortunately. So what he was doing, he believed that the way to Philosopher's Stone is human urine, because he saw the similarity in color. And also he thought, just like you know other people at that time, that because it's coming from something as perfect as a human body, the human body must contain some of the Philosopher's Stone or in some form. And so they thought that they can make it from urine.
And so how did he go about trying to get it from urine?
Well, he collected huge amounts of urine. You know, it was, gallons and gallons. And then he concentrated that. So imagine the smell. It must have been very popular with his neighbors. So he concentrated that. And then he basically, this was the usual thing that alchemists did. They just heated it. So he heated that. He separated, there were several things coming out of it, and he just separated them underwater. And eventually he got this white, or more precisely yellow substance that actually glowed in the dark.
Hmm.
So he was quite surprised.
And that glowing substance was phosphorus?
Exactly, yes.
And did he still think once he had phosphorus, did he still think it was the philosopher's stone, that elixir of life?
Well, at least initially he did, because he tried to transform lead into gold using it. I don't know how he did that, but, apparently he tried. But he, of course, didn't succeed.
But phosphorus is essential to life, right? It's part of our DNA, literally. And because it's essential for life, because it's found in our body, there were also misconceptions that it would be good for you. And in fact, phosphorus can be incredibly toxic, right?
Just like with any, chemical element, it can be very useful in some form, and it can be very harmful in another form. So phosphorus in its elemental form, white phosphorus, is actually very toxic. But people, at that time, because they actually discovered phosphorus to be present in brain tissue in unusually high quantity. So they thought, well, if it's in the brain, taking phosphorus must be good for me. So actually the pharmacist at that time made kind of solutions of white phosphorus or pills and sold them, well, to solve just about any illness you can imagine.
And then later on, it also became part of fertilizers. I mean, presumably that was based on a little bit more and better understanding of the role of phosphorus in life and what it can and can't do.
I think that actually came much later, in fact. And now we know phosphorus is quite often the most limiting element for plants. They usually have access to some nitrogen, some potassium, and phosphorus in many areas is the one that limits the growth of plants.
And where do we get phosphorus to make those fertilizers that we use so much of at this point?
Well, that's part of the problem. So majority of the mineral that the fertilizer is made from, so that's phosphate rock, is actually present in one country, actually in Morocco. So there are actually some other deposits, in other parts of the world. But I believe 70% is coming from Morocco.
Well, Peter Killian, the piece that you wrote for TheConversation.com has the rather ominous title, 350 years after its discovery, phosphorus is running out, and you've kind of hinted at this. I mean, if all of the phosphorus that we're mining for fertilizers is coming from Morocco, how much is there and how long will it last?
I think, this is quite difficult to say exactly, but there are some predictions that in about 30, 40 years, the demand will outstrip the production.
30 to 40 years, that's it.
Yeah, but, take it with a pinch of salt, right? Basically, what it means at current prices and current usage, we've got around 30 or 40 years to go. There probably will be, new deposits discovered and or the ones that are present, will just become more expensive to dig out. I don't think, there is going to be a huge crisis and, shortage of phosphorus.
So where does the phosphorus end up? Why would we be running out of it? I mean, there's only so much in those deposits, but where does it go after it's used as a fertilizer?
Yeah, that's the main part of the problem, actually. So the problem is to kind of recover phosphorus, or once you use it as a fertilizer, it goes into plants, then, plants might be eaten by humans. But what happens with that then is you can never kind of recover it back unless you use very traditional ways like, fertilizing plants with manure and things like that. It's excreted from, in the form of urine and feces, and basically it gets into the wastewater streams, right?
So at this point, it's literally being flushed down the drain. It ends up eventually probably out in the ocean. But couldn't we just basically go back to the origins of phosphorus and retrieve it from urine?
Yeah, so that's one of the ideas in the paper. We look with a bit of amusement at, where the Hennig brand was looking for phosphorus initially.
Apparently he had the right idea.
Yeah, it looks like that, yeah.
Is this a problem, though, that people are paying attention to, taking seriously, actually working on solutions for?
There is a company in Canada that is already doing this. I don't know in what in what scale, but they are apparently recovering phosphorus from wastewater. So it is going in the right direction, I guess.
Well, Peter Killian, thank you for sharing that story. He's a senior lecturer in chemistry at the University of St. Andrews and has written about the past and potential future shortage of phosphorus for TheConversation.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Until next week, I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.